Howdy, everybody. It's Arthur Staple. Welcome back to No Sleep Till Belmont, your Islanders podcast from The Athletic. It's a snowy Tuesday, and we've got the Excella Corridor Adventure Queen, AJ Maletsko. We'll get into some of that in a minute, but it's good to hear from you and good that you're safe and sound in your car right now.
Yes, I made it. We'll call it an adventure. I like that. That makes it sound a little more exciting than it was, but I was ready. I was ready for Isles game day, but now I'm headed home.
Yes, she is headed home because I think as the whole world knows by now, there is no Islander game tonight. They were supposed to play the Sabres, the first of two. Buffalo, it's a game of contact tracing at this point. The Devils and the Sabres played in Buffalo over the weekend. After the Devils' last game, they had five guys go on the COVID protocol list. The Sabres, according to our John Vogel, were not happy about that situation because the Devils had a couple of guys go on. I think Travis Zajac went on right before the weekend series started. Kyle Palmieri went on between games, and they still played both games. So I think the Sabres are a little bit annoyed, or a lot annoyed, about that. Contact tracing and the needing time to make sure that there's enough negative tests before the Sabres headed down here means that this game tonight is postponed indefinitely. You'd have to think Thursday is probably going to be postponed indefinitely as well, just to err on the side of caution. And then we'll see where the Islanders stand. They're obviously fine. They'll be practicing all week if that's what it comes to. And then they'll play the Penguins on Saturday, most likely. Be that as it may, our first segment, we'll be talking about what happened in the last week, which was really nothing good. So I think the last time we recorded, we were heading into two games in Washington and two games in Philly. And they did get 2 points out of the games in Philly. But, man, there were some uncharacteristic moments in those four games from what we've seen from Barry Trotz's Islanders.
Well, if we're going to talk about the bad stuff to start, then I think my connection might be cutting out and you can just carry this section for us, Arthur. It's a rough week right now in Isles country, and it's hard to watch as fans. And obviously for you and I who cover the team, we're looking for the positive and in a normal 82 game season, you can rebound from this. Teams have bad starts or bad stretches. I mean, look at last year, right? The Islanders obviously had that great start with that 17 game point streak. And then they had that horrible skid at the very end of regulation before the pause. And they went on to compete right up until the Eastern Conference final. So there's all sorts of ways teams can get around this. But of course, this year is unprecedented. It's a 56 game season. And I think what's hard about it is that the adjustments that they've made, whether it's by personnel or whether it's by the way that Barry is trying to motivate his team. And you can see different ways right after the first game against Washington, he was angry in his press conference and he didn't mince words. And then after the second game, he was a little bit softer, basically saying we need to rekindle the joy. So he's trying different things because he recognizes that, you know, in this, not only a shorter season, 56 games, but also it's all intra-divisional. So you can lose ground so quickly, which they have, right? They go on this losing streak, and every night they're giving up points to their own division. As we were saying before, every night's a 4-point night, right? Now on the flip side of that, if they go on a pretty good streak, winning streak, that is, they could make up some of this lost ground pretty quickly. But I think for them right now, it's just hard to watch because it's, over the last 2 years with the Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz tandem, this is not the Islanders that we've become used to seeing, right? They're not playing that structure. The lazy icings or their, you know, they've been good in the faceoff dot. So there is some of those details that are there, but it's just been frustrating and it's hard to know why it's happening.
Yeah. And I think we'll try to break it down a little bit. And certainly there were some more obvious culprits that are not necessarily main, regular contributors. You can kind of point to Leo Komarov. We'll get into that in a minute. Our last segment, we'll do some Twitter questions and Leo's name has come up a lot. So we'll save that one for the end. But I think more central to what the Islanders' identity has become, you think about some of the regular guys that maybe are not producing the way that they should. And one of them was somebody Barry Trotz talked about today in his Zoom, and that's Brock Nelson. And nobody can say anything bad about what Brock Nelson did the last 2 years. You know, he was a guy who never really found a consistent spot under the previous two coaches. You know, they shifted him from center to wing when he first came up. He sometimes played with John Tavares way back when. He was a guy who used to get off to a hot start. The Brocktober hashtag was always a legendary one. And then he'd cool off a little bit. But I think in the last 2 years, it's not a stretch to say that he's been their best, most consistent player. As Barry said, he's been Barry's go-to forward, even on a team with Matthew Barzal on it. So to see him struggling the way that he has, and you mentioned the icings, you know, he had one where he was a couple feet from the red line and iced a puck in Washington that was turned into a lost face. He lost the faceoff, turned right into a goal for the Caps. These aren't things you're used to seeing from Brock Nelson. Some things you're not used to seeing from Josh Bailey, who did score his first goal of the season on Sunday after having been switched from Nelson's right wing. But when you have a guy that's that integral and that reliable for a guy like Barry Trotz, who relies on his veterans so much, you know, it's obviously a huge blow because you don't really know how to get out of it other than hoping this guy will turn it around.
Right. And I think that when you look at one of the strengths of this team, when you look before this season, right? So looking last year, especially with the Pageau pickup at the trade deadline, so the last month or so, 5 weeks of the season, and then into the playoff bubble this past summer, you look at the strength down the middle, right? Matt Barzal, obvious the strength and the value that he adds to this team. And then you have Brock Nelson, who's more, up until this point, has been more of a 200-foot player, obviously can add offense. He's got a big, rangy frame. He can kill penalties. He can play on the power play. He's been a very versatile and, as you said, consistent player for Barry Trotz. And then you add JG Pageau, who does sort of solidify that line. And up until this year, that fourth line has been so solid and so consistent, and they've been virtually invisible. So I think that that's one thing that you look at when you have one piece fall out of line, right? Whether it's the Brock Nelson piece, is it which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is him falling out of line, is it because of a shortened preseason? Is it because of the weird timing? Is it just these intangibles? I don't know. And how does he snap out of it, right? Does he have something else going on right now that, you know, they don't always disclose all the physical ailments that these guys have? Or is it just a mental thing that he's got to figure out playing with Beauvillier and Bailey? And athletes have ebbs and flows, and they're allowed to. They're human, right? So you got Beauvillier on the shelf right now, and then you have Nelson and Bailey who are sort of struggling, and then you keep a rotating door on the other side of them. I did like that switch that Barry Trotz made with Bailey and Eberle, because I thought Eberle joined the Nelson line for that third period, the second game against the Caps, I think it was. And it was like he was shot out of a cannon for a couple shifts, right? And he brought the energy and he brought the pace. And Bailey jumped right in on the top line, because right now Lee and Barzal are working like a well-oiled machine, in my opinion. Yeah. But in the last game that these guys played against Philly, that top line with Bailey on there, they had 14 shots on goal, right? I mean, they're certainly generating the offense. But back to your point of how do you get Nelson going and how integral is that? I think you see how integral it is when he doesn't offer what he usually does. And it reminds me a little bit last year when Pellick went on the shelf. You sort of appreciate it after the fact. You're like, oh, wow, that's actually a really important piece of this puzzle. And so, you know, these athletes, they don't have as much time this year. Nelson's got to figure out how to get his game going. He has done some good things, but for the most part, he has been invisible. He's got to figure out how to generate some of that offense, use his size, use his shooting, and still be as physically tough to play against as he has been in the past.
Yeah. You talk about kind of the revolving door. I mean, your line mates, if you're Brock Nelson, you're a veteran, you need to be, you know, able to generate your own offense and be the guy in the middle who's helping this line to be good while you get through till Anthony Beauvillier comes back. You know, they had Leo Komarov on that line, I think, for Thursday's game in Washington. Didn't go very well. And then it was Dmytro Timoshov making his Islander debut on Sunday on that line. And he really struggled too and didn't play in the third period or overtime. So the consistency part is tough, especially if you're used to being, you know, if you're a Jean-Gabriel Pageau, I imagine the inconsistency being the only consistency in terms of your wingers, you get used to it and you put it out of your head. But if you're a guy like Nelson who doesn't change line mates very often and hasn't for the last couple of years, if you're not sure what you're getting at least one of your wings, I imagine that's not the recipe for dragging yourself out of a funk. So, Beauvillier did skate today on his own. If there's no games until Saturday, maybe that helps with him getting back, and maybe that helps with that line getting back. So that's the second line. And you mentioned, AJ, the fourth line really has struggled. They've had some better moments, I think, the last couple of games, but still not where they need to be. And if we're looking for any other – any other holes, I guess. You know, Ilya Sorokin played a lot better against Philly the other night, and he made two of the best saves, I think, that have been made in the NHL this year in that game. One of them on Claude Giroux with about 2.5 minutes left, and they would have gotten no points out of that, and it would have been no fault of Sorokin's for that one. But I do. Having said all that, there were a couple goals I thought that maybe the first two of Joel Farabee's goals in that game that were kind of direct on. They were, you know, one was a low to high, the other was a quick shot that Pelech may have deflected. But I think high shoulder shots for a guy who's 6'3", you don't want to see those go in with such regularity. And I, you know, and you have to roll with the punches with a new guy. But, you know, for you, how much of it do you think was a little bit on him, and how much of it is just the team just isn't playing well enough around him?
Well, I think it's more the latter. I agree with you that goalies typically, we haven't gotten to know him so much yet. We've had a couple Zooms with him, and he's certainly working hard and endearing himself to the media, at least just because he's excited to be here. But, you know, since he's played, he hasn't really been available to the media, and for obvious reasons, right? Especially in the era of Zoom, the Islanders have control over who they put in front of the camera, as opposed to just opening the room like they used to do, where we could go and find whoever we wanted. And I think somebody like Sorokin is adjusting to this game, and he's doing a fantastic job because of that save. And then the one early in the first period, I think it was on the 5-on-3, or maybe one of the penalties that just expires. Maybe it was a 5-on-4, but it was on a penalty kill, and he made a tremendous, his right to left save. I think it was on Voracek, but I might be wrong on that too. Again, I'm driving, so just a reminder, I'm watching the road. That to me was that's starting to build up that ever important confidence between a goalie and the players. And they can say all they want, oh, he's great in practice, he does this, or we watch him work. But until he comes up with saves like that, that's going to be sort of that intangible trust that's building between the two of them. Now the team has to start building their trust up with him too. And they've got to start playing a little bit better. And I worry that this becomes a little bit of a mental game, right? With anything, if a scorer goes into a slump or, you know, whatever it may be, when a goalie, he hasn't won with his new team yet, and he comes in very highly touted, that's a hard thing. And then it starts becoming sort of an animal unto itself. And that's my worry with him in net, because the players will think we've got to win for him. And you'd think maybe that could motivate them, or that could get them sort of anxious maybe. Right. And holding onto their six a little bit too tightly. So they certainly need to play a little bit better in front of him, or honestly, in front of Varlamov too. They just need to play better. They're not playing great this season. We haven't really seen, maybe the first game of the season, we saw a great Islanders team that we would like to see for the rest of the year. And I think since then it hasn't been the best that they can be, in my opinion. And some games have been worse than others for sure. And there's good things to hang your hats on, good moments, good periods. But you know, I think back to the Sorokin thing, when you look at some of the goals that are scored on him, he's going to be able to come up with those. And you talk about the high shots for a bigger goalie, and actually at 6'3", that's probably an average goalie in the league right now. But you know, goalies want to make themselves look bigger. And there are sometimes he's out there that it's almost like he's making himself look smaller, because I think he's trying to find the puck. And that goes to all the activity in the smaller ice surface, right? So there's a lot more chaos in front of him than he's used to. So he's maybe hunched over. It sounds weird, but he may be getting down low to try to find the puck, and that's making himself look smaller. And the biggest thing for goalies, you want to look bigger, take away the space.
We mentioned a little bit about some of the inconsistencies with the middle six in the lineup, some of that due to Anthony Beauvillier's injury. But Jean-Gabriel Pageot has seen a real cornucopia of line mates so far, considering it's only 9 games in. And Barry Trotz did say today that whenever they get back on the ice for a game, he's leaning towards making it a little bit more consistent for that third line. And he's got a lot of options there. You know, I think if we're looking for some of the positives so far, small though they may be, Kiefer Bellows and Oliver Wahlstrom played a couple games together on Pageau's wings. They looked pretty good. Wahlstrom had his first NHL goal in Washington. It hit off about 19 different people, but it still counts. And those two were able to kind of look pretty good consistently. And I think that was a big step for Barry Trotz, because he doesn't usually put two relatively unproven guys out there together, especially on the same line. And then he flipped it a little bit to get some more energy on Sunday. Went with Austin Zarnik, making his Islanders debut, and Michael Del Col. And that line with Pageau, I thought was might have been their best line for a couple of periods. They had a lot of energy. Del Col hit the post. It was real. It had a little fourth line energy to it. Like, Zarnik is a little guy. He's a veteran, you know, a college hockey player who wasn't drafted, played about 115 games or so in the Flames and Bruins organizations, was a regular with Calgary a couple of years ago and had a decent run. So I think this is a guy who's not a proven Islander commodity, but I think he's a proven NHL commodity as a 12th or 13th forward. And I think hearing Barry talk today about him being that energy guy, kind of like a six man in basketball, someone who can come off the bench or come off the taxi squad and fill in every so often, probably going to be his role. So I would think that it's down to Del Col, Bellows, Wahlstrom for those two wing spots on Pageau, on either side of Pageau. From what you've seen, AJ, who do you think fits there the best right now?
Well, quickly, just on the Zarnik thing, I thought he was great. I really liked the way he played. I agree with Barry. The energy he brought was great. It's not, you know, people may think he's a rookie. People are sort of keep putting him in the same category as Bellows and Wahlstrom. And so I'm glad you sort of remind people he's been around and he's had great runs with Calgary. And I remember him when he was playing here in Boston, where I live. In terms of those other three, when Bellows and Wahlstrom to me had their best game right before they were pulled out of the lineup. And I think that was probably confusing to Islanders fans. But what it tells me is that Barry Trotz is taking this ability to pull up and down from the taxi squad very seriously. And he's looking at the big picture for the season, in that it's a short season, but you never know who's going on what COVID protocol list at any right time. And obviously injuries, you look at Beauvillier or what may happen. He's got to give these guys some chances, right? He's got to have them be around the team, whether it's on the taxi squad traveling, whether it's in practice, taking reps on the lines, right? And that's really important to him. So getting Timoshov and getting Zarnik in was important. Now, going back to those three in your question, I really liked the Bellows-Wahlstrom combination. And I'm not taking anything away from Michael Del Col, because I thought he had some really, really good shifts. And he's been around and he's put in his time and his work. And he knows Barry Trotz's system a little bit better. So I think he's going to – but for him to go up and down is going to be a little easier because he's done it for the last two years with Barry, as opposed to those other two. One of the criticisms Barry Trotz has made of both Wahlstrom and Bellows, he's overly positive. But what he said is that they still are young players. And when things get a little frenetic out there, which right now in the Eastern Division, every game is going to have some elements of chaos, that they fall back on their young tendencies, right? Their junior tendencies, and they throw pucks away. And that was the big one that he commented on, backhand up the middle. And he's big on puck management, especially on the defensive side of the red line. So, you know, I think that that's the sort of stuff that he has a little bit more trust in Del Col. But on the other side, when you look at Pageau, he's such a good mentor. And Pageau has told us in those Zooms, Arthur, that he loves it. Those young kids, Bellows and Wahlstrom, keep asking him questions. They keep asking him every time they come to the bench. They ask him where to be. What about this structure? How to do this? And it shows that they're really learning. But I think Pageau is a really good mentor for them. And so to put them together consistently might give Pageau some scores too. And he works so hard at both ends of the ice that I think all of us would love to see JG Pageau with somebody who can finish those great setups that he has. So I would lean towards those two young kids. But I hate to say that, because I do think Del Col had a great game the other day.
Yeah, I tend to think right now, and I'm basing it more off what we've seen from Barry rather than what my preference would be, I think he might split them up. I think you might see a Del Col-Pageau pairing for a little while, and then one of those two guys rotating in. The other aspect of it is, and we can't ignore it, with the roster situation, Wahlstrom and Bellows don't need waivers to go back and forth between the taxi squad. Del Col, Ross Johnston, neither of them have been put on waivers this year. Leo Komarov has already cleared waivers, so he can go back and forth to the taxi squad, I think, for a little while longer. And frankly, Leo could go back on waivers. I don't think anybody's going to claim him. But those other two have needed, you know, will need waivers if you want to take them off the roster. And they're at, you know, they're pretty much at the limit. We didn't really get into what happened in Washington on Thursday, which was they decided to gamble with Ilya Sorokin, who's also waiver exempt, and put him on the taxi squad to make room for an extra forward, which meant Corey Schneider was backing up Semyon Varlamov. And you don't usually see Semyon Varlamov or any NHL goalies stay in after they give up five in about 8 minutes, which is what happened in Washington in the second period. But it didn't seem to me that Barry was comfortable putting Corey Schneider in that game, because you're not really looking at Corey Schneider as a viable option for this year. It's really Varlamov and Sorokin, and you're keeping Schneider just in case, like we said, COVID protocols, injuries, whatever. So there's also that roster movement situation. You gotta juggle things properly. So to my mind, I think it's, if I had to guess for the next game, I would say it's going to be Dalcol and Bellows on Pageau's wing. And Wahlstrom, you sort of hold him in reserve for a little bit. Maybe Wahlstrom and Bellows swap a little bit. But I get the sense that, especially with the fourth line not going as well as you want it to, the second line still finding its way, if you've got a guy in Dalcol who's playing that grinding style, which is, what Michael Dalcol at his best will be as an NHLer, I don't think you're going to take him out. But, we'll definitely have to see. Barry doesn't tip his hand too often. So
what I'm going to be curious about is, you mentioned that fourth line, is how long a leash he gives them, because they have built up a couple years worth of trust in him and the way they've played. But so far this year, they haven't done much. So does he shake them up to try to invigorate them and maybe put them back together eventually? And that's, I'm going to be curious if that happens and when, because I think he's got to start thinking about it maybe.
Yeah. And I think, too, that's a spot, Cal Clutterbuck and Casey Zizekas have their penalty kill roles, which they're going to stick with. So they'll probably be in the lineup. I think it's the Matt Martin spot that probably is the one that would change. And I think if you got Michael Dalcol playing the way that he played the other night, that's not a bad spot for him either, to sub in for Matt Martin. And then maybe you put the two kids up with Pageau. So they've got some options. They don't really have options big picture roster wise without maybe putting somebody on waivers. But once they get past that point, yeah, they do have some options with that bottom six maybe to get them going. I wanted to, before we get into the last segment of questions from you fans, we haven't really talked about the defense core. There's been some good moments. Noah Dobson, we talked about a little bit. Nick Leddy had a goal the other night. Adam Pellick had a pretty good game, kind of helped jumpstart the offense. Also Scott Mayfield. And I think there was a lot of credit given to the D for being able to be active and kind of create a lot and keep the pucks in. Against Philly to help them come back from two goals down the first time they did it on Saturday. But there were some gap issues, I think, in a few of those games in their own end, which is also something we haven't seen a lot from this team in the defensive zone. Is that a matter for you, AJ, of, a group that's still, needing to play at a high level and not finding its way? Or is it factor forwards? There's always a lot of things that go into defensive zone play, and it's not just the six guys who play defense.
Well, and that's the key for me. And this is speaking as somebody, I played in two Olympics. I was a center in one and I was a defenseman in the other. So I can look at it from both sides. And as a center, I was I was a faceoff specialist and I was really known for my defensive play, not necessarily offensive output. So I always look at the D zone as a 5-man unit or 6-man unit too, if you include the goalie, because they do play a pretty critical role too. But the way that the five players move together has been the smoothness with which a Barry Trotz coach team moves together, I think, has been something that has been very notable over the last 2 years. And therefore it's even more jarring this year when they don't seem to be. There have been goals where you've seen the forwards, run into each other, literally physically run into each other and almost set picks on each other, or, whatever it may be, they get a little bit turned around, they get flat footed. Some of the goals that the Flyers scored against them, now they were beautiful passing plays. So it's tough to give the Flyers credit, but you've got to a little bit on those first two first period goals they scored. But if you watch the Islanders, they get sort of puck watching, right? And when I say that, I mean, both the defensemen and the forwards, they all play a critical role. So I do think that there is, one area that I think the defensemen are doing a good job is they're gapping up in the neutral zone typically. And I think overall they've been pretty good about that. Once the other team gains the zone, then I think they've struggled. And, and if I'm coaching against the Islanders, I'm going to tell them to chip and charge for the first half of the game, put the puck behind the defenseman, make the defenseman go back and retrieve it, and then put pressure on them because they're having trouble breaking out. Right. And then once you do that, then that would make the Islanders defenseman back off a little bit. And it gives you more room to enter the zone with possession. So What I'd like to see maybe is more communication. And, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to me that I don't hear them when I'm in the arena because there's no crowd. So you would be able to hear them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder now, without a game tonight, potentially without a game Thursday, does this practice, do these 3 days of practice, bonus practice time, come at a perfect time for them to sort of right the ship? Because there isn't going to be a lot of practice this season.
So now for our last segment, we'll take some Twitter questions. And as always, you guys on Twitter are very vocal and have lots of questions. So I'm going to sift through. Isles Dave, David Horowitz, has the question that I've been asked a lot, not always in the form of a question, but I hear it a lot, which is, what does Barry still see in Leo? And Leo being Leo Komarov. Leo had an exceptionally unfortunate week, I guess is the nicest way to put it. In that game last week, a week ago, which I think was his first game of the year against Washington, took a major boarding penalty in a 2-2 game with 9 minutes to go. Islanders killed that off and looked great. Barry put him back out for a couple of shifts and on a sort out 3-on-3 back check, completely whiffed. Puck ended up in the net with 26 seconds left, and that was what the game that made Barry very upset afterwards. Leo went back out again the next game against Washington. I think he was a -2 in that one. Played again on Saturday, did not play Sunday. So, you know, and this is a question that we've asked Barry about Leo and about guys in general. I think Cal Clutterbuck had a couple of rough ones too. When you have guys that are kind of your character guys, and for Barry, I think Leo Komarov, Cal Clutterbuck, Casey Cizikas, these are his character guys. They're not the big skill guys, but they fill a role and they do what they need to do, and they're positive presences in the room. When they start to kind of show their age a little bit or break down a little bit, how hard do you think it is for Barry to kind of, you know, basically change his view? I mean, after Leo made those couple of glaring errors last week, you know, he said, he's got a lot of trust in Leo Komarov. So, you know, how do you kind of change a Hall of Fame coach's mind about a guy?
Well, you know, and you mentioned a couple of the other character guys, and the other one I'd add to that is Matt Martin. Yeah. And I think that there is so much value in the character guys that people like us can't see. And so I think the coaches, the staff, and the players, for sure, when they're in the locker room, and Arthur, you know, as the media, we're allowed in and out of the locker room in non-COVID time. So we can see it a little bit, and we can see, you know, and some of them are easier to see than others, right? Like a Johnny Boychuk's effect on the locker room is tangible. You can see it with the way that he can just lift people up and get people laughing and loosen people up. I think that with Leo Komarov, it's a little different because, first of all, he's not a huge fan of talking to the media. And part of it might be that he speaks like 4 different languages, maybe even more. I don't know how many languages the guy speaks. But he is one of those guys for Barry Trotz, in my opinion, that he will do whatever's asked of him. And a coach needs guys like that, right? I thought the last time that Leo Komarov, though, was the most valuable to the Islanders was when Filippula was still on the team, because the two of them worked really well together. And Val Filippula went on to the Red Wings last season. But I thought, you know, and he was called the Swiss Army knife. And it may have been John Cooper that coined that term for him down in camp. I can't remember who first came up with that. But Filippula could do anything. And he and Leo played really well off each other. But as Isles fans know, I mean, his nickname's Uncle Leo, right? He's always around. He's always there for the team. He does whatever the coaches want of him, whatever the team wants of him. Obviously, sometimes he isn't able to bring his best game out there. He makes mistakes like he did the other night. And that's hard to watch because I was frustrated. I'm thinking, and I was really surprised that Barry came back with him the next night. But again, I think that shows the trust, as you said, and it shows that these guys have built up a bank account with Barry and that's worth something. And I think he's a loyal coach and he owes it to them. But then, you know, then he recognizes he's got to move on, and then maybe he'll try to find a different spot for Leo to play. And maybe it is taking a rotation on the fourth line, and, you know, maybe he's got to get a guy like Matt Martin out for a game and he puts Leo in. Maybe not. Maybe he puts Ross Johnston in that spot. So, you know, to answer that question from Twitter, what is Barry seeing him? I think is how they phrased it. It's something that we can't see from outside the locker room. But I think that that's a hard one for Barry Trotz, is to try to get out of his own biases, I guess, would be, you know, how can he always look at it with a fresh set of eyes? He can't. So he's got to rely on his experience and maybe his assistant coaches to help him recognize that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a hot topic with the fans. They're that's why they're fans. They speak emotionally. They vent on Twitter. They vent online. They vent to me via text sometimes, the people that I know better. And it is a lot of questions about Leo's value to this team. And it really, you know, he's not the highest skilled guy, and probably a 4-year deal wasn't necessary. And I think that leads into the next question that I'm going to go with. Hillel Lerner asks, is Lou Lamoriello's roster construction too outdated? And I always see this kind of as a it's either Lou or it's Barry. And I think you and I both know, and you can help kind of elaborate for everybody. This is a tandem thing. Like, there's no GM bringing in a guy like Leo Komarov without saying to Barry Trotz, we're bringing this guy in and I want your input on it. Like, there are some teams, I'm sure, I don't think it happens very much anymore, where the GM just says, we're bringing in this guy, and the coach is like, well, I don't want this guy. You know, there's no separating the two. Like, Lou is constructing his roster based on input from Barry and the coaching staff about how they want to play. And I think when it comes to Leo, or maybe Matt Martin getting 4 years at 1.5 this past offseason, Andy Green coming back, he's not bringing these guys back without Barry Trotz saying, I want them back.
No, and I think that, you know, the question is the type of roster outdated? That's a tough question, because this game is evolving, and it's evolving fast. And Matt Martin just played a milestone game recently, and he was asked about it. And he said, you know, he was sort of proud of the fact that he was able to stay relevant. And Barry Trotz spoke to that too, that this game changes so quickly. And actually, I think you were on that call, Arthur, and Matt was talking about how it used to be bigger and stronger, and now everyone's trying to get lighter and skinnier and faster. And he was laughing about it. So, you know, there's all these different ways that the game has changed, and the rules have changed, right? I mean, these little taps on the hand that used to be part of the way you played now are penalties, right? So there's all these different things that these players have to evolve. So is Lou stuck in the past, back when he was winning cups with New Jersey? I don't know. I think he's a smarter guy than that. I think he has been able to evolve. And I do think he puts more stock in the locker room and character guys that we were just talking about than other not all general managers, but then some, right? And I think that was where JG Pageau, right? He could offer a lot on the ice, both ends of the ice, 200-foot player, but they also knew that he's a real character guy. And so I think that Lou vetting these players, I don't think that can be outdated in terms of the importance of what that brings, in terms of the actual style that they play. I don't know. Can you say loyalty to players is ever outdated? I don't know if I agree with that. So, in terms of what you're saying, Arthur, how it's a tandem between Lou and Barry, I think that that's, I think it's valuable. I don't think it's outdated. Do they have a longer term plan? Maybe. And I think they're both smart enough to understand that this is going somewhere. This isn't about winning a game today. Obviously, it'd be nice if they could win along the way. But I do think that they've got a plan in place that maybe we're not privy to.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it too, is that we're in year three with this GM coach tandem. And you have to look at what you inherit and what, you know, what sort of cupboard you have when you come in. You know, I don't think Barry Trotz coached the same way or encouraged the same sort of guys to be on the Capitals when he came in there, because you have an established group. Their core is super high skilled, and you're really looking to just sort of fill in the gaps with that group. And frankly, when you think back to what Washington did in the year they won the cup, some of the key guys in their cup run were guys like Devontae Smith-Pelly, who is the sort of guy that you want to have, you know, a character guy who's maybe not the highest skilled and hasn't always been the most consistent, but you catch lightning in a bottle with a guy like that, and you can be off somewhere to complement some of your higher skilled guys. I think the Islanders' core just isn't as high skilled, and they didn't have a lot coming right around the corner. It's certainly debatable whether they've developed those guys the right way. That's always up for debate, or whether Lou has sort of stocked the cupboard even more, having traded away the first round pick for Jean-Gabriel Pageau. But I think, you know, Barry Trotz is an adaptable guy. He's been coaching so long, he's not going to just sort of say my way or the highway. And I think that they've come up together with an idea of how this team needs to play to be successful. And at this point, it's hard to argue with it. Maybe in a couple of weeks, we'll be arguing with it a bit more. But for now, given the track record, I don't think either of us or a lot of the fans out there are in a position to say you're going to have to pull a 180 right now and change course. My last question from Twitter, even though we have a lot more and we'll be getting to them more, it's going to be a regular segment this season. Matt Kammerer, who is a former usher from the Coliseum, has a question for AJ asking, since you've been around this team or any other team recently, have you gotten on the ice with the NHL players? What was that like? Or maybe the last time you did play with NHL players. So I'm curious about that too, AJ. When was the last time you were on the ice with NHLers?
Been a while. I am the last time I pulled on a Team USA jersey for competition was in 2003. So we're some ways away from it. But you know, we did sometimes play with the guys in the off season, training wise, and I trained up here in Boston for the most part. So I would work out with a guy named Mike Boyle, and that's where all the NHL guys up here who were here in the summer for all different teams played. So we'd all work out as a big group. And then, you know, that was in the morning, and then inevitably we'd get ice time somewhere and we would just go out and either do drills, sometimes separately, sometimes together. We would do, I always thought it was sort of funny because I'd play with some of the guys I'm 5'11" for those that don't know. So in the women's game, I was generally the tallest or one of the tallest on the ice. And so whenever I would go up against the NHL guys, I'm like, oh man, these guys, they've got long reach. They're, you know, and all of my teammates were like, yeah, now you know how it feels. You got somebody's like all gangly and got this long stick. So we did do that. And then, you know, at the tail end of my career after the 2002 Olympics, my husband and I actually moved to Manhattan. And I was there, none of my teammates were there. So I was on my own. So I would go to the Rangers practice facility up in Westchester, and I would skate there. I know Islanders fans do not want to hear this, but I would usually skate with some of the players coming back from injury or rehabbing after the team practice. So I'd get out there, and sometimes I'd have the whole sheet of ice to myself, which sounds great. It's horrible if you're trying to train, by the way. So I always loved it when there were some guys there, and we could just, even if it was just practicing one-timers or trying to do one-on-ones or passing drills. So yeah, I have skated with some guys. I've never skated with any of the Islanders. I wouldn't want to do that right now because my mind would try to write checks that my body certainly can't cash anymore.
Well, if it ever happens, we're going to talk about it here. That's for sure. So
we're going to put all the cameras away. That is for sure.
All right. Well, it's been another great show. I'm glad AJ's great adventure today ended with you back home safe and sound after riding the Amtrak down and back almost to New York for a game that got postponed. So and very happy that you could join us as usual. And we'll be back next week with more No Sleep Till Belmont. I just want to say to everyone, thanks for listening. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave a rating and review. If you're enjoying the show, it really helps us out. You can also subscribe to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month by visiting theathletic.com/No Sleep Till Belmont. Thanks, AJ. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.